My name is Daniel Shoptaw, an Arkansas accountant with a love for the Cardinals. I spent a lot of years watching the game before deciding to write about it. Now I express my thoughts and opinions at C70 at the Bat, part of the Cardinal Conclave. His name is Dan Buffa, a former Busch Stadium scoreboard operator with a passion for the game. His writing talents can be found throughout the internet on a variety of topics, including movies and anything St. Louis. You'll find him often bleeding out words at stlouissportsminute.com. Every week, we pool our knowledge and our opinions to create this podcast. Together, we are the best Dans in baseball. And welcome in to the first episode of Best Dans in Baseball. I'm Daniel Shoptaw, C70 at the Bat. That's Dan Buffa, St. Louis Sports Minute, and every other place on the internet, I think. We're here. We're going to try this out for a while, see how this works. Every week we'll get together and talk a little bit about the Cardinals. Before we do that, just because some of you may be coming from Dan's fan base, some of you, well, not likely from my fan base, but maybe from me somewhere along the way, we're going to do a little bit of an introduction, let you know who we are and what kind of experience we have, so you can know how much credit to give to whatever opinions we've got. Dan, why don't you start out? I know you've got a pretty good history there.
Yeah, I mean, I've been writing about the Cardinals probably since I even worked on the manual scoreboard. I worked on the old Busch manual scoreboard from 98 to 2005, and I don't know, somewhere in between that mania with McGuire and all the Pujols, and I kind of decided to start writing about these guys. It was a way of it was therapy for me, and it still is. It's a way for me to complain about them and not have to do it to anybody I love, including my family. I can just get the computer and pretty much unload. But, you know, it started out as a rant that I would send out to people on my email list, about 30 people that unfortunately maybe 28 of them didn't immediately hit delete when they got the email. But eventually I started the Dose of Buffa, and I pretty much wrote about everything there. And then I joined the UCB with Mr. Shoptaw here and created the Cardinal Nerve Center briefly at the Conclave. I wrote at the Cardinals Farm. I've written so many places that sometimes I almost have to go to a notebook and just write the pages down, and I kind of forget because I don't do them anymore. And I write right now, as far as STL Sports, it's stlsportsminute.com. I'm putting everything right there and kind of kick-starting it up with Corey Rudd and a couple other really talented writers. But I also do a lot of movie reviews. I started a website with two friends called filmac.com. I write for KSDK. As far as really permanently writing, those three. And I also write for Up All Night News. That's another kind of endeavor, a couple other guys and a woman, a group of people that we write about anything there. So if you want to think of, like, posts that I've made, I wrote about top 10 ways a man can be sad about losing his beard. That's the kind of things we write about for Up All Night. Wherever you can find anywhere else, you'll find there. But Cardinals Talk, it's all at stlsportsminute.com, and, of course, on Twitter every day with my lovely family of passionate Twitter folks that always keep me on my toes, including Mr. Shoptaw here.
Well, and of course you've got 1 week a month you're on UCB Radio now with
exactly,
Coy,
yeah.
Vollett. And you've also got a regular radio hit here in Arkansas, don't you?
Yes, Rob Butler. He's got a little show called River Country. He's out of Jonesboro. When he just kind of just happens to send me a text, says, "Hey, you want to drop a dose tomorrow on the show?" I'll say, "Whatever, it's fine." I usually go on a show about 8:15. I've been doing Rob's show for a couple of years now. It's fun. I go on there. We talk movies and Cardinals. So it's those two really areas are really the two areas that I can really talk about. If there was ever a 24/7 podcast, I could just keep talking over and over about movies and Cardinals baseball, because there's never enough room on a podcast for us to really fit all that in. So if you ever need to know about movies or Cardinal baseball, I'm your guy. And other stuff too, but that's basically my forte.
All right. Well, and, you know, for me, not nearly as widespread, written at my blog. It's on its third location now. It's sitting over at the Cardinal Conclave, but I've been writing it since 2007 after a notoriously bad Kipwell start. Got me started there. Like I said, I've been doing that. It'll be right at, I guess, 8 years, come this July, right after the All-Star break. Got UCB Radio, helped with it, get started. Don't do it as much. I'm the floater now, fill in, and a fifth Wednesday guy. But every week I do Gateway to Baseball Heaven with Tara Wellman. It's part of the Seamhits Broadcasting Network. You'll find that over at Blog Talk. And then I've got my own podcast, Conversations with C70, that I do whenever I feel like it, which is not as often as it should be, but I just got one of those up yesterday, and so we have that. So there you go. If you want to know more about us, you've got plenty of spots. Like I said, Buffett Dan's at Buffett82 on Twitter. I'm at C70. You can find us, no problem. Let's shift into the important stuff then. Now that we've covered the vital stuff that we had to do, let's talk about the real good stuff. And let's start by the Cardinals. The Cardinals have plenty of issues right now, but the biggest issues are health related. We saw Matt Holliday go out Monday with what turned out to be a groin pull, not a tear like Matt Adams, but still he's on the DL for 2 weeks at least, maybe longer. The club really doesn't seem to know yet. Lance Lynn goes back to St. Louis from this trip with cramping in his forearm. He's going to have a report out hopefully tomorrow. Not sure if he's going to make his start on Saturday yet or not. These are significant issues to deal with. I mean, the Cardinals are obviously the best team in baseball right now, 39-21, about 4.5 games up on anybody else in MLB. But that's not necessarily going to stay forever, especially with people dropping like flies. Let's talk about Holliday first, because that seems to be an interesting way to go. We're seeing, you know, the Cardinals still have four outfielders. What's the best configuration that they have, out of the outfielders they have, that should be out there every day?
I think right now, I mean, and I'm a John Jay guy. I think I've spilled blood on the keyboard on Twitter over John Jay in the last 2-3 years, but with his bat not being there right now, I think the best what you can do is you got to lose your consistently hitting left fielder, who's really, as Bernie Miklos said, the heart and soul of your lineup. You know, without Holliday, you kind of lose your anchor. But if you can't have that offensive presence in the lineup, you got to go with your best defense. And I think Grichuk in left, Borges in center, and Jason Hayward in right. I mean, that those kind of things for a Cardinal team that's really thriving off their pitching right now with the rotation, the bullpen, you got to give these guys the best possible defense you can get. And those three guys are either Gold Glove winners or potential Gold Glove winners, especially Grichuk, who can play all three spots. But, and also with his, I mean, Grichuk's bat is, you know, it's still got holes in it. And he still strikes out a lot, but I just think you got to consider what gives your pitching the best chance, and also his lightning rod bat, which can, you know, it's got power in it. But if the Cardinals want to play this smart and then they want to go internally, they can call guys up like Tommy Pham and Biscotti, but I don't think that's going to happen right now. I think you have to go with Grichuk and Borges and Hayward. I think that's your best shot.
Yeah, I think you're right. I'm pulling up right now, looking at the month splits on these three guys, what they've done in June. And granted, they don't all have the same exposure. You know, Peter Borges only has three starts, although he's played in six games. He's hitting .222. You're looking at John Jay, nine games, five starts, hitting .083. And then Randall Grichuk, who, you know, it's gotten some significant playing time. He's played in all 10 games this month, started seven of them, and he's hitting .207. It's not like any of them are lighting the world on fire right at the moment. Now, Grichuk has had, he definitely had some moments this year. He's definitely had some streaks to him, maybe a little bit like, Jim Edmonds, although probably his streaks aren't quite as high as Jimmy Ballgame. But, you know, that's what you kind of look at. You look at those games like he had in New York where he struck out five times in one game and then had, you know, two games in a row after that with, you know, multiple extra base hits. I think with the fact that he's so young and then he's power, like you said, you got to have him out there, because he's still got a chance to do something. So that does bring you down to Jay and Borges, and I think you're right. I think Borges has the best defense. you got to figure you're going to be playing lower scoring games, which is what we've seen out of this team a lot this year anyway, even before Holiday goes out. It would make sense. It would make sense to have him be the guy out in center field. That being said, that doesn't necessarily mean that's what Mike Matheny's going to do. It really does seem that Matheny's going to give John Jay as many opportunities as possible, whether that's a good idea or not. We've seen a little bit, I think, of growth out of Matheny this year, but it still seems to be that John Jay's one of his guys, and Jay's going to be out there, unless assuming he can go out there.
Yeah, I mean, really, if you want to have a call to arms right now, there's one guy that can really tap into what we know he can do, what he's done in the past, is Jason Heyward. I mean, we all know his defense is stellar. And, you know, with Grichuk still really, I mean, Grichuk, I think is still a very raw hitter when it comes to just professional leagues. As far as the minor leagues or major leagues combined, he's still learning how to adjust to pitchers and face them for the second and third time. And, you know, if there's one guy that can really shoulder the load, especially at the plate, I mean, I think if a guy who's had some good moments this season, I know his May was, I mean, Jason Heyward had a really good May. He had 340 for the month of May. He slugged 443. I mean, he had, you know, 3 home runs, 10 RBIs. He's kind of come down a little bit in June, a little bit. But if there is one guy I look at to say, hey, bud, I mean, for this next month with Holiday out, we need you to shoulder the load and not let the offense go dire. I mean, just when you switch over to the offensive side and you get these guys in the lineup, and you just look for that one guy that can really, you know, blast the lineup off, except for Johnny Peralta. Johnny Peralta has been the biggest, even more of a surprise this year than he was last year. But if I'm looking at production from the outfielders, I think I'm looking at Jason Heyward to really give us a push. Because if you are going to go with that all defense outfield and you're going to push it really hard and run with it, I think Heyward needs to produce a little bit more at the plate. Do you think that's a good thing, or do you think I'm asking for maybe a little bit too much from the guy as he's adjusting himself?
No, I think that's right. I think we gave up significant assets. Granted, assets that the Cardinals had in abundance, but still assets in the fact of Shelby Miller and Tyrell Jenkins that have turned out to be pretty well for Atlanta. I think we want to see some return. Now, you know, I do think Heyward's been better than maybe we think, because that early April kind of overshadows what you said. In May, he was strong. In June, he's done all right. It's kind of interesting looking at his splits here. He's hitting 320 against lefties and 228 against righties. I mean, granted, he's got more exposure to righties, but it's like Matheny immediately benches him. And we've seen that sometimes before. I think Matheny automatically assumes if you're hitting with a left hand that you can't hit a left-handed pitcher. And that's not necessarily true. I think that he's going to have to, with Holiday out, let Heyward play pretty much every day. Not that we've seen that. You know, as soon as Holiday got hurt, you know, Heyward was still on the bench the next night. So, you never know what Matheny's going to do. But, yeah, I think we're going to see, I hope we see some more out of Heyward. What frustrates me with Heyward is you can almost guarantee at the wrong times, he's going to pull that ball to second base and that little grounder.
Yeah.
And that seems to be, I don't know what that is. I don't know if he's trying too much. He's trying to be a little bit more aggressive since he's down in the lineup or what, and looking at bats and getting some swing and some pitches. But he has hit more ground balls to that side of the infield than I think anybody. It's kind of like those times in the past where you could almost guarantee Matt Holiday was going to hit into a double play. You can almost guarantee that Jason Heyward's going to hit that ground ball to second base. So, you know, I'm hopeful he'll heat up as the summer goes along. I know there's some talk, you know, about shifting the lineup around now that Holiday's hurt and maybe moving him back to the top of the lineup. I'm not real fond of that idea because, you know, I think he's more comfortable in that middle spots, in those fifth, sixth, seventh spots. And I'd really like to see him there.
Yeah, he's definitely really, I mean, I think he's just best in the 6 or 7 spot. I'm not sure about 8. I think 8's pushed him down a little bit low. He's been a couple of games there. But, yeah, he kind of reminds me of, you know, Tino Martinez when he was here. He would just, you know, you knew he was either going to pull that ball to second base or he's going to pop up at the wrong spot. And, you know, the other night when the Cardinals lost that 4-3 game, instead of blaming the offense that, or the guys that played the whole game when Heyward ended the game, with the ground out, is like, oh, Heyward, you know, and this guy takes one at bat in the game and the rest of the guys just, you know, kind of flop. But that just tells you where Cardinal Nation is with this guy, because we did give up, you know, Shelly Miller, a guy who's, he's come back third a little bit in Atlanta, but he's still pitching really well, and people are wanting to call the trade a bad trade, even though, this is not, other sports where they play once a week and the season flies by. We still have, 3 months, 3-4 months to go, and the jury's still going to be out until the end of September about this trade. But I think people really are just waiting for him to have that stretch of games where he just drives runners in, hits a couple bombs. I mean, he had that big home run on May 27th that kind of changed the Arizona game. It helped, it helped give us the sweep in the series. I know that he tied the game, and then we took it, we walked off with it. And that kind of gave fans an idea, and it came right at the end of his great May, that he was going to blast off. And then he kind of had a rough patch of games, and I do think that he needs to play every game. I don't think there's any reason, especially with the Cardinals needing to see as much of him as they can and, get him some regularity, get him in one spot in the lineup and leave him there. I really wish Matheny would just leave the lineup alone, lock guys into a spot and just run with it, especially guys like Hayward who are trying to find their feet, and Grichuk especially. I know guys like him can bat anywhere, but if you give these guys a regular spot in the lineup and they get comfortable, they know what's expected of them, and they know where they're coming up, where their expectations are. But with Hayward, I think he has to play every day. I don't care if it's a lefty. I don't care if it's the guy that can throw with both arms. I mean, he has to be out there every game. I don't think with Holiday out, and if they don't want to go to Piscotty at all, you have to run with Hayward every day in the lineup.
Yeah, I mean, if you run into a really tough lefty, we've already gone through, people like Kershaw and stuff like that, then maybe you send him there because he's gonna have some days off. But for the most part, even your run of the mill left-handers, he should be out there. I agree. Hopefully we'll see that. Because we got to see something. This offense has struggled significantly over the past couple weeks. Definitely. I mean, you had those.
He's kind of underwhelmed. I mean, if I had to say one word, I wouldn't say disappointed. I would just say underwhelmed. Because he's had, at one time a couple weeks ago, he had more extra base hits than Matt Holiday.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't even think that by looking at what he's done. But he's got glimmers of production. But then, like you said, the other night, I know you were thinking it. I didn't think he was going to come through. I thought he was just going to slam one into the ground. I know John Axford was having some control troubles, and I thought, man, if he could just find a pitch here, but he just slammed one into the ground. And I don't know. It's been talked about with the protective mask that he wears if it's messing him up, but I don't think the numbers back that up. I just think that I think he's pressing, and I hate to put a simple thing on it, but I think he's just really pressing. I think it's like when Matt Holiday, after he signed the big contract in 2009 in the offseason, he started that season off really badly. I mean, I think his agent met with him and said, hey, man, just, swing, go out there and hit. But, of course, the difference is that Matt Holiday had a big contract already. He just had to relax. Hayward's playing for a big contract, and it's I said it all year. He is the one person I got my eyes on because he really controls the future of this offense. I mean, if he doesn't have a great year, what does John Mozeliak do? If he has a really good year, you're going to have to pay him. If he has an okay year, will he maybe go for a shorter contract and try to or really take a qualifying offer and try to earn it, or will he go to the American League and get paid? His storyline is just so instrumental to the Cardinals' plans.
It can be, but I think the Cardinals have options there too. I mean, if he does struggle, I think the worst case scenario is he struggles so much that they don't even want to offer him that qualifying offer, which I don't think that's going to happen, because even if he struggles, he's a young guy, they're going to offer him that qualifying offer because somebody's going to pay him even if they don't get him. And if he comes around, then, he signs. Again, even if the club had Shelby Miller, I mean, assuming Lance Lynn is healthy, which is, we're going to have to talk about that in a minute, but, I don't see where Shelby Miller goes into this rotation. I mean, there's just not a spot right now. And so you can't worry about what you gave up because it's not hurting you right there. So again, like you say, hopefully he can get into a groove. Maybe the weather, as the weather warms up and he's comfortable in St. Louis, who knows? Maybe the Cardinals go to him, get an extension signed early. Seems unlikely, but hey, if he's struggling and he's not sure the market's going to be there, maybe he goes ahead and signs and then can get that comfort, like you're saying. But, hopefully he can just figure out a way to, to stop hitting the grab balls into the ground. Of course, then again, that seems to be the motto of the team sometimes.
But he's still a young guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, it isn't like he's desperate for a contract. I mean, if we could climb into, you know, July and the end of July, and I don't see Hayward as a very greedy guy. I don't think he's the kind of guy that wants to hold out and cause, and you know, if he doesn't have a great season, I don't think he's going to go, okay, pay me anyway. I mean, I just don't see him as that type of player, but you never know. I mean, it could go so many different ways. I mean, the Cardinals could say, hey, let's do a shorter term deal, you know, and with some incentives, or, you know, if he really wants that big term deal and an American League team or a team with money is offering it, I think, you know, it depends on, you know, will he go to a team for more money or stay with the Cardinals, who he knows can win and try to earn a bigger contract? It's all those kind of things with Hayward that really could make a writer write about 9 articles about it. Really wouldn't have an answer to it. So I think we're going to have to just buckle up and watch.
Most likely. And like I said, I think we all expected a little more power. Like I said, that home run against Arizona, this last 20 hit, he's only got 5 this year, which, granted, is kind of high up on the list in the Cardinal organization.
Yeah.
You know, 5 is a lot for this team.
It is.
If you take out Johnny Peralta, I mean, and you look, I mean, this is a team that had Johnny Merlino with none. So, you know, I think Hayward being the new guy can sometimes get the brunt of some of the complaints that we have about this offense. But again, some of that's earned, and hopefully we'll see a better Hayward going forward, and we can start talking about how much money we're going to have to pay to keep him. Rather than whether we're going to keep him.
Yeah. I mean, it's almost like I think of Bo Durham, you know, where the guy with the juju beads is rubbing on his bat. And if we can just get Stan like to rub his bats on the Cardinals bats, where he's just hitting like home runs every night, hitting majestic bombs. I don't know if that can work. I'm not going to ask the director of Bo Durham if that's like an actual philosophy, but when it comes to home runs and the Cardinals, I don't think we're going to have any big boppers, but a few more from Hayward would be nice.
Yeah. Now, obviously, if we're not going to get the offense, we've got to have the pitching. And Lance Lynn going down potentially. And again, this is, I hate to sound alarm bells. I hate to get too worked up, because it's very possible that, you know, Lynn's report's going to come back on Friday, and it's just something minor, and he might miss a start. He, you know, that's about it.
Yeah.
It could be more, though. And if it is, Cardinals kind of getting into a little bit of a tough position, because, you know, the idea at one time was to have Marco Gonzalez be the guy that could take those fill-in spots, but he's hurt. You know, we start to get into the point where Mo's got to figure out which hole to fill, not how he's going to fill, you know, fix one or two. He's going to have to figure out which big hole he's going to work at, and it might have to be the pitching staff.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and it's crazy because we're going to be, like, kind of breaking something down that's probably the best part of the team. I think the MVP of the team so far is really just the bullpen, because they've been short with a lot of loads of innings, and they've had to go really do a lot of work early on in this season, and the rotation has been just as good with losing people like Adam Wainwright and having Jaime Garcia miss a part of the first season, and, you know, not having Gonzalez as your safety valve, and, you know, relying on John Lackey to almost kind of be your veteran guy, and Lance Lynn. I just think if Lance Lynn goes down, it's gonna push Mo's hand to looking into a trade a lot earlier than he wanted to, because I don't think he wants to. I think he wants to try to stay in house, and because the biggest part with Mo is he's going to have to be the desperate party in these trade talks. He's going to be the one that has the least amount of leverage, and other teams know that. I mean, all the other GMs know what the Cardinals are going through, and I bet you they're all waiting on Lance Lynn's MRI report too, just to see if their phone's going to start ringing. And, you know, also something that we have to mention is, you know, how well he's pitching, but Jaime Garcia is a ticking time bomb on a mound. And it's one of those things where you go, I mean, we really need you to stay healthy, but how much longer can you rely on him before his shoulder starts to nag up? And then you also have the innings, you know, down the road, we're going to have the innings thing with Waka and Martinez. So can those guys last a whole season? The Cardinals are pretty bare in the pitching department, but they keep pitching well. I don't know how they do it.
The good thing about this start of the Cardinals is the fact that they do have such a significant lead. You know, right now, 6.5 on the Cubs, who are playing at the moment, so it might be 6 by the end of the night. it's to the point where even if Lance Lynn has to miss a month, you know, that's four starts. Even if you lose all four of his starts, chances are you're not necessarily losing your lead.
No.
So that does give Mo a little bit of a chance to take stock, and see if he wants to, you know, move a Carlos Villanueva into the rotation and bring up Lyons or Cooney to be that long man, or if he wants to start looking around and seeing who's out there. Now, again, you know, there are some people that are going to just start saying, well, you know, Cole Hamels is out there. Well, yeah, Cole Hamels is out there, but the Cardinals don't have what that takes to get Cole Hamels anymore.
No way.
It's a little hard to say that given how deep this farm system. Yeah, but it's not there anymore. I mean, they're all up in the major leagues, or they've been traded off, and there's, you know, you can't trade a Carlos Martinez now, even if you wanted to beforehand, because that's a huge hole to put in your team right now, that hole that Cole Hamels wouldn't fill. So, you know, you're looking at second range starters. You know, do you bring a Kyle Loesch back and hope that the St. Louis Magic rubs back off on him? You know, do you do something like that, or do you just say, hey, we're going to take what we've got and see if that just doesn't get us through?
I think, you know, especially with Carlos Martinez, you know, providing the most quality starts and really pitching the group the best of the moment. I mean, for a guy that was once being questioned by a very popular St. Louis Post-Dispatch writer for maybe being launched out of the rotation.
Hang on now. Popular may not be the word you're looking for there. But
well,
anyway.
Popular in the wrong way.
Yeah. Notorious maybe be the word you want.
Notorious is a better word. But, yeah, I mean, just to see what you know, what Carlos Martinez is doing, I mean, that makes you think right back to that Shelly Miller trade. I think Muzinak held on to the wrong guy, the right guy. People are trying to say, well, why not? Why Miller? Well, if it wasn't Miller, it was going to be Martinez. And I think Mo just made a conscious choice to pick the one that was, you know, had more talent. In my opinion, I think he's still going to be a better pitcher. And the way he's pitching right now, I think that's proven to be one of the bright spots in this rotation as far as just durability. I mean, with John Lackey having his problems on the road and, you know, Martinez having that little bump in the road, I mean, in his last five starts, he's given up three runs total. I mean, three earned runs total. He's got a lot of strikeouts. He's calming down on the walks. He's looking more confident than ever. But as far as what Mo could do, I mean, all you got to do is hope that Lance Lynn isn't going to miss a lot of time. I mean, you're sitting here with the equivalent of when you were sitting there with Holiday. You're just hoping it's not as bad as Adams. Like, you know, when Matt Holiday's quad was injured, you go, okay, is it torn? Because if so, he's gone for the whole year. And then you lost another starter. Well, it turns out he won't be. I think you're hoping for the same thing with Lance Lynn. I mean, we understand that it's kind of a nagging forearm issue, and those things can kind of reoccur throughout the season. And he felt it against the Royals in KC. He mentioned it after that game, I think, to the media after that game, because he ended up pitching through and being fine. But, I mean, whatever it is, I think you want to get it checked out. And I think if it does sign on him for a little while, you want that to happen right now, because you don't want to get into a pennant race and a division battle and lose this guy with that same injury in August. You want to see what it is. You want to... Hopefully it's not as bad. If it is 3 to 4 starts, I think the Cardinals can manage that. I think you might see him bring up a guy like Tyler Lyons, Tim Cooney. I mean, those guys can fill in. But as far as making that trade for Cole Hamels, I mean, the biggest problem with that is that Ruben Amaro Jr. knows that Muzinak is in vast, dire need of pitching. And he would just drain the Cardinals. I mean, first thing he want Colton Wong. I know that's already been reported that Wong has been discussed. You get Colton Wong gone, he's going to want Carlos Martinez. You're essentially losing another starter to get Cole Hamels. And people have talked about Ryan Howard, who I think is even more crazier to get than Cole Hamels, just because the Cardinals aren't on his no-trade list. We'll get to that later. But a trade with the Phillies, and this is going to persist, Chop, until a move is made incoming help is arrived. People are going to mention Hamels. I just think it's still a far-fetched idea.
Yeah, and it really is. I can't see that happening. The only problem is that there are not a whole lot of teams that are going to be selling. There are going to be some teams that probably should be selling, but that may not be. They think they're contending a little bit more than they are. But there's a lot of, you know, it's the curse of the second wild card, and it's one of those things. You saw it with one wild card, but you've really seen it with two, with everybody thinking they're still going to be in it.
Definitely.
Everybody wants to buy and nobody wants to sell, which really hurts the trade deadline. I mean, we've seen a little bit of moves the last couple of years, but it's not like it used to be. And this year especially, there's a whole bunch of clumped up mediocrity, if you will.
Especially in the West. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, the only team that's really clearly like buried right now are the Milwaukee Brewers, which makes the Loge thing the most probable thing as far as getting somebody. Let's say if Lynn comes back and he's going to miss time. I mean, that's the first move that would come to my head just because of how buried the Milwaukee Brewers are.
Yeah, and the Reds are going to be right there. I mean, they lost that Cozart today for the year. And they're going to, you know, Mazarosco is probably going to be, he's not responding well. You know, they're going to be selling too if they're smart. And there's been some question about how much Walt Jocketty still has on his fastball, but I think he's smart enough to realize that the writing's on the wall. He's going to have to do some stuff there. I mean, you look, the only, you know, the trouble with, of course, dealing with either one of those teams is they're in the NL Central.
Exactly.
And you don't want to give up much. But, you know, again, they're not going to be giving up much. I don't think the Cardinals are trading. You know, they're not trading Stephen Piscotty unless for some reason they can sign Jason Hayward and then they, you know, but they wouldn't trade him within division. But, you know, other than that, they're not trading anybody huge. So I don't know that's going to be a big deal. You look at Loesch this year, though, a 6.27 ERA and 13 starts. Oh. I mean, you know, a whip of 141. That's, I mean, yeah, you'd like to think maybe it would be better when he gets into St. Louis, get into this organization again. But, you know, he's pitched well in Milwaukee the last 2 years. It's not that he just stopped pitching when he left under the arch. So either something that's going terribly wrong for him, or it's kind of running into the load. It's hard to say, hey, I'm going to go take a gamble on him, and hope that works, because that's a lot to stomach. I mean, we saw that last year with Justin Masterson. You know, Mo went out and got Masterson.
Yeah, he got slapped around.
And he never, you know, Mo said didn't think he was healthy, after the fact, he found out he didn't think he was healthy. Although Masterson hasn't looked good this year either, so he may just not have anything left. And you wonder if you'll get the same thing with Loesch. So, you know, I was kind of thinking a few weeks ago about Mark Burley, but the Blue Jays have been able to pull into that race. And so, you know, that's kind of ruled out. I don't know. If you had to make one move, if you only could make one, a hitter or a pitcher, assuming Lynn's going to be out for a while, let's just assume that. If you had to make just one, because that may be all that Mo can do is make one move. What do you do? Do you do hitting or do you do pitching?
I think, you know, unless a guy like, I know Corey Rudd mentioned about Ben Zopras, who could just play so many positions, I think the team is still going to need, I mean, as much as I like this lineup to get a boost, and I think you got to make a move for pitching, because I think pitching is going to carry this team. I think a team that doesn't really rely on power, and I think that because Holiday isn't going to miss, you know, it's not a severe, it's not a grade 3 strain of the quad, I think that kind of made the move a big move for a bat kind of a little less likely. I can see a move for a bat and an arm, but if I had to choose one, I would think you got to get some kind of arm, and you're right about Loesch. Loesch is getting, in his last 10 games, he's allowed 5 or more runs. In his last 5 games, he's allowed 5 or more earned runs in 3 of them. And, you know, he's getting beaten up by the Central. The problem with trading for a guy named Loesch, for Loesch, is because he's facing a lot of the teams the Cardinals are going to face. I mean, he's getting beat up by the Reds. He's getting beat up by the Cubs. So I think you're right about not getting him. But I think if I had to choose one, I would go with the pitcher. I just think this team's going to need innings. I think, you know, good old, you know, mother, you know, the good old health of those young arms might come up into play. I mean, how long can Jaime last? Even if Lynn misses time, will that forearm come back? I think Mo's going to need a pitcher more than a hitter, even at this point.
That's interesting. And I understand what you're saying, and I don't think that you're saying anything wrong. But I'd probably still lean toward the hitter, because they're going to have to find somebody that can back up Mark Reynolds or split time with Mark Reynolds, just because he can't be out there all the time. And right now, Pete Cosma's the backup first baseman, and that's just not right. He hasn't yet as much, so I could easily be wrong, but I feel like part of Mark Reynolds's success this year is the fact that he has been limited and been spotted. When he has to start playing every day, I'm afraid we're going to see a lot more strikeouts and a lot less hits. So I'd like to see somebody that could play a significant amount of time at first base. Maybe it's a first base, third base outfield thing. Maybe it's a third baseman and you move Matt Carpenter to first.
Something like that.
I don't know. But I think with guys like Cooney and Tyler Lyons, who have struggled a little bit when they've been up in the big league this year, but I think they can cover some ground if they're necessary. And the fact that, you know, this rotation is so strong, to the point that even with Lance Lynn gone, if Lynn was out for a length of time, you'd have a place to put. But if he's going to come back and you've traded for some guy, you're going to have to make some decisions in that rotation. You know, baseball finds a way. That might be when Jaime gets hurt. I don't know. But my feeling is hitting just because it's struggling. But, again, you're right. I mean, there are some issues with the pitching staff that depth-wise may need Mo to go that way. But my feeling is get somebody that can play some corner infield or corner and work that way.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, another guy that except unfortunately it lies in our division and was brought up by a couple people on Twitter is Aramis Ramirez. If Mo is going to, you know, put a quarter in that machine and try to see if it can give him a little more push. I mean, his salary is a little bit drastic at $14 million. I'm not sure the Brewers would let him go and what they would want, but that fits your one credible theory of moving Carpenter to first base and getting a third baseman who can hit home runs, who's got some pop, who thankfully he hasn't done it this year against us, but he hits the Cardinals really well. Usually he's not having a great year, but he's got seven home runs. He's only hitting around 200, but you just start looking at names that could work and that wouldn't have a lot of cost, but you know, there's just not a lot out there that jumps right out at me. I mean, If Billy Beane, you know, wants to talk about Zobrist, that's a guy who can play so many positions and can help the Cardinals in a number of ways. But, you know, there's just not a lot of names. I mean, Mark Trumbo was traded to the American League. I thought he might be a fit with the Cardinals, especially with the Reynolds thing. But the one thing with Reynolds that I want, I kind of want more home runs. I mean, I was looking at his numbers, you know, he was playing more through June last year. He had more at bats, but he had like 13 or 14 home runs at this time last year. And he's only got three, and he's been starting for, I don't know, at least over 10 games. And the one thing I'm missing from him is power. And as you said, you know, Molina doesn't have a home run. You know, Howdy only had three when he was playing. I mean, Peralta's pretty much been our steady power bat. Wong, Carpenter have kind of cooled off a little bit in the power area. But if you wanted to get some power, I mean, right now, seeing who's available, there's just not a lot of names jump out at me unless you're going to have to give up a lot.
Yeah, it is interesting pulling up Mark Reynolds' game log here that since Matt Adams went down, he's hitting 271. So that maybe is a mark against my idea that he's going to get overexposed. But like you said, no homers, only two doubles in that span. You got to have a little bit more. I mean, we've seen where if you clump the singles together, this team can just score some runs, but it's difficult to do that, and even more so without Matt Holliday in the lineup. So, you know, yeah, great. I don't think there's anybody that just stands out in there, and maybe Mo will do something unique. Maybe Mo will go out and spend a little bit more to get a guy that's around for two or three years, a situation that we're not seeing right now. You know, maybe he can ship an extra outfielder off to someplace. I don't know what he's going to do, but it really thinks he's going to have to do something, I think, unless, you know, then again, you know, we've seen it with Matt, we've seen it with Yadier Molina, we've seen it with Albert Pujols. Sometimes these guys heal quick, and if Holliday can heal quick and Lynn's not hurt for an extended period of time, you know, we've just spent 30 minutes talking about something that doesn't really matter. That may be, and that's hopefully, that's what it is. You get those two guys in there and they're not out for any length of time, then you're allowed to go out and just kind of fine tune, pick up a veteran for a, you know, class A pitcher or something like that and see if it works.
It's one of those things where if Lynn's okay, then he can maybe, you might need a pitcher, but you don't need one right now. You might be able to make it to July 31st and then reassess your pitching and see who's hurting, who's going to need innings help. Is Marco ready to go? Hopefully, you know, by by the end of July, and you know, you have Jordan Walton hopefully coming back to the bullpen. It's one of those things where, you know, this Lynn thing, it's worth so much conversation, but it's got so many things that extend from it. It's got so many directions it can point the Cardinals in. If he's out for a while, you might have to think more direly about a bat and an arm, because if the rotation loses in our arm, the offense may need to be able to score runs and more runs than they have and be a little more consistent. But if Lynn's okay, yeah, you can definitely put your eyes back on the lineup and see if you can find somebody to back up third, somebody that can maybe switch, you know, Carpenter over, somebody that can maybe get the very bad weak hitting Pete Cosma off the roster, which I don't think is going to happen. But yeah, I mean, I think the Lynn MRI has a big deal just because of what it can mean for the Cardinals and what Mozeliak will be looking to get.
Yeah, I think that's going to be big, and that's something we'll have to definitely keep an eye on tomorrow, because that really could change the look of the season going forward. And it's hard to say that when a team's playing 650 ball, that the season kind of hangs in the balance on an MRI. And I think that's probably overstating it somewhat, because, I mean, you look at this, and let's transition a little bit here. You look at this rotation, and you look at how good they have been and how young they are, and especially Michael Walker and Carlos Martinez. We have seen those guys just continually be dominant in ways that we haven't seen necessarily St. Louis pitchers be all that often. Chris Carpenter and Adam Wainwright have obviously done it some, but especially Carlos Martinez has been a revelation this year.
Yeah, I mean, really, I mean, especially Walker. I mean, when we come in the season, I didn't know what to expect from the kid with his stress reaction in his right shoulder. And, you know, he was kind of like a minor ticking time bomb, just kind of like Jaime is every time he takes the mound. You hope he can stay healthy, because Walker, he's like a combination of Waino and Carpy. He's out there. He's very confident, very poised. He works fast. He can really just keep hitters off balance. I mean, on the season, you know, hitters are only hitting, you know, 227 against him. I mean, he's just, you know, he's got a good whip. He goes out there and he pitches. He competes. I mean, he's been a big surprise. And I think you're right. I think, you know, these two kids that are just so young and got so much ahead of them and, you know, could be the foundations of this rotation, along with guys like down the road, like Alex Reyes and Rob Kaminsky, you know, who are still a couple years away. But yeah, you really have to look at what the pitching's doing and what they're able to sustain. I mean, every time we think this Cardinal team's going to go off the tracks a little bit and lose more than two in a row, which is, you know, fantastic. I mean, this team just touched 20 losses the other night. I mean, they're the last team to touch 20 losses. I mean, there's so many teams out there that are just malfunctioning. I mean, the Brewers threw in the towel and fired their manager, and, you know, they've gone off the tracks. The Reds, if you said, are close, which means it's going to be a three-team race, really, in this division. The Cubs and the Pirates are fighting behind us, but they can't seem to put a winning streak together to catch us. And I think what you said and what people have mentioned, that, like, Cardinal Tales Bob Netherton has mentioned on Twitter, is that, hey, if the Cardinals play 500 ball, we still have around a 90 wins for the season. So as long as the Cardinals just don't completely blow up and malfunction and you know, lose sight of the whole season. I mean, we are done playing the Dodgers. That's kind of one thing I'm kind of, even though we played really well against them, I mean, we're done playing them, and, you know, you've eaten through a lot of your interleague schedule, and I think the Cardinals have had, I mean, they've had some easy stretches, but they've also had some rough stretches against, you know, some good teams, and we faced a really, really hot Rockies team, and we escape with a win. I think the Cardinals just have to worry about not getting swept, not having a big losing streak, not allowing these other teams to climb back into the race. But they've shown ability to sustain success. And yes, they still have the best record in baseball. And yet, you're right, we're sitting here talking about, you know, a doctor visit. Like, it's like, you know, the wick on a bomb. So, and it's one of those things where it could be tied to the expectations that we have with this team and maybe what fans can see ahead with the way some guys are not hitting and the way that some arms could also blow up. And, you know, the bullpen could just completely break, even though they've been pretty elastic so far as just being able to give a lot of innings. Carlos Villanueva has apparently got a new right arm this year because he's pitching out of his mind, and, you know, they're making do. And I don't think this team has even played their best baseball yet. I mean, they had that great winning streak, but I think if we can get a few more bats going and the arms can keep going like they are, I think the Cardinals are really capable of going on a streak. But you're right. I mean, you know, Lynn's MRI will tell you what you need to know about the rotation. But as far as I'm concerned, I really don't see this team, malfunctioning. I haven't gotten anywhere near the ledge this season just because of how impressive they are at just holding on. I mean, look at what they did in LA last weekend. They won 3 out of 4. I thought that was going to be a very rough series, and the Cardinals just kind of stole those games.
Yeah, and I mean, if Kershaw had been just slightly off, and not been, you know, super Kershaw. They could have won that game too, because Jaime Garcia was right there with him until the 2 runs. And you look at the Rocky series. I mean, we get worked up about the Rocky series, but you know, Michael Walker had a 2-0 lead in the sixth or seventh inning. It was gone, partly because that's Colorado for you.
He had 10 strikeouts.
Yeah, I mean, he could have easily won that game. And we're talking about another series win, and you know, we won 2 out of 3 against the Rockies, and okay, we're moving right along. I mean, granted, it the injuries and things have factored in to the angst for this week.
Definitely.
But you know, I think that it's partly, and maybe just partly, the fan base makeup. We're not used to having a dominant team because we don't spend the money. I mean, the Yankees in their heyday, they probably never, I doubt their fan base really worried too much about it because they had high priced stars and they knew they were going to win and they had always won. The Cardinals, they win, but they don't necessarily have that huge cushion. They don't have this team that typically tears it up. I mean, you look at, you know, 2011, 2012, you had to come from behind, to actually just even make the playoffs. You know, these things, I don't think that everybody takes success for granted. With the Cardinals as much, somewhat. I mean, we kind of expect to be in the playoffs, but I don't think we expect the team to be this good. And so we start looking around the corners, trying to figure out exactly what's going to happen that's going to pull this team down. And hopefully there's nothing around that corner. But I think we try to be prepared just in case there is. Again, with watching this rotation, and again, I was a person that was not necessarily on the Carlos Martinez bandwagon because I wasn't sure he could have the command and long to go deep into games. He's obviously figured that out. I mean, he still walks some people occasionally, but he's, you know, you can give up 7 hits and no walks, or you can give up, you know, 3 hits and 4 walks. He's still got 7 base runners. And that seems to be about what he does. I mean, he really limits the hits, and he's piling up the strikeouts, and he's just an electric presence. Not only in his way he pitches, which is totally different than any way anybody else pitches in this rotation, but he's got that personality that you don't necessarily see on game day, but you see during the week. That is something that this club kind of needs as well.
And it is great. You know, the one thing I'm looking at is that, you know, that's kind of come around in the last 2 weeks is that the Cardinals have a good base at the end of their bullpen. The bullpen, like I mentioned earlier, is pretty much the MVP of this team just because they've had to handle so much so early. But, I mean, look at Trevor. People aren't talking about, but Trevor Rosenthal is having a great season. I mean, he's currently leading the league in saves, leading the National League in saves at 20. He, in his last 5 appearances, he has 0 walks. And that's one thing I was really wanting to know after yesterday's game, where he just comes in and just, you know, blows the Rockies away. I mean, there's more and more times this season where a team like the Cardinals are going to need that kind of guy, and they're getting that kind of great closing stuff from their guys like Kevin Seacrest, who has kind of slowly moved into the setup role since Walton's kind of departed. He, you know, it was him and Rosenthal yesterday. Really, it was Martinez. Well, Martinez, Seacrest, and Rosenthal really putting on a show yesterday as far as what they're able to do to a very, very well-hitting and good-playing Rockies team. But look at Rosenthal, what he's done. I mean, he's got 7 outings, he's been 7 saves, and the outing before that, he got the win in the Arizona game. He's really pitching well, and he's really pitching well on the road. I don't what it is about Rosenthal, the one thing that's really come over from last year is his ability to pitch on the road. And 3 outings on the road trip, 2 in L.A. and 1 in Colorado, he had 3 innings, 5 strikeouts, and no walks. And he didn't throw over 20 pitches. It's just one of those things where you have to look at the bright spots. If you're a team that's dealing with a lot of injuries, the brightest spot is, of course, your record, which is 39-21. But you got to look at what's going right. And that's guys like Martinez and Waka and Garcia and who are pitching really well with the rotation kind of in flux. And you get your bullpen, which is really performing well, especially your lockdown guys like Seacrest, Rosenthal, and guys like Peralta. You know, fans, the one thing I can tell you is that appreciate a record that's that great in the beginning of June. I mean, this season's not exactly young anymore. We're getting into, you know, we're into the third month here. And I just think the one thing I always try to tell myself is that just look at the record. I mean, if the record's good, the last 10 games aren't dreadful. Your team is staying afloat. And if there's one thing we know about baseball, it's just keeping your head above the water. And no matter what happens as far as, you know, injuries or having a rough series against a team, when you're playing a team like the Rockies in a sandbox in Coors Field, you know, if you just survive without getting swept and you just keep the streak going, you're facing the Royals this weekend, which we're going to rip into here in a minute. I just think what I try to do when I get overcome by the, oh, gosh, what's wrong with Holiday and Lynn, I just look at the record and I look at what our young players are doing and where our bullpen's doing. It's kind of, it reassures me that everything's going to be okay.
We're running into the 45-minute mark on this thing, and we could talk all night long on what this team's got, but we'll save a little bit for next time. Before we talk about Kansas City, though, let's talk. This week was also the week of the draft, and you know, I'm not a huge prospect watcher. They need to be pretty far along, but that it was interesting. First draft under Chris Correa, that the Cardinals went away from their normal philosophy, got some high school guys, got a lot more hitters than pitchers, yeah. Which, again, this organization really needs some hitters coming up in it. I mean, overall, again, neither one of us know what the heck is going on, and nobody does. I mean, you can say, oh, this guy's great and this guy's great, but the history of baseball is littered with guys picking first that never made it. But just on first blush, yeah, happy with especially the early parts of the draft.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at their 15 picks, and like you said, there's a lot of position players. You got, I mean, Nick Plummer's already been dispatched to, you know, to I think Johnson City today. I think he's already heading down there soon to play, and that's your top pick. You know, he's an outfielder. He's one of those guys, you know, it didn't really jump out at you, but then you have a pitcher, Jake Woodard, with your second pick. Then you have, you know, Bryce Denton. You have a third baseman and an outfielder. You have two third basemen in the first, you know, six picks. And I think it's good. I think people really wanted that. I think they wanted more position players, take more of a chance, you know, these guys that can potentially, you know, be role players in this team soon, not just going all pitching. I mean, even in their first, it isn't like they went away completely from pitching. I mean, they still got, in their first 10 picks, they got, like, I think four pitchers. But it just, to see the position players, I kind of liked it. And like you said, even more, it's so hard to tell, even worse than the NBA or the NFL or the NHL. These kids, you don't know what they're going to become, especially the hitters, especially when they go from aluminum to wooden bats, which I just call, like, passing the gauntlet, you know, as far as being a hitter. But I do like the approach that they took. I liked that they kind of went away from the norm and they got some hitters that could potentially be role players in this lineup down the road. Especially, I mean, I asked Derek Gould today, is that the fastest you ever seen a top pick put ink to the paper and get on down to the league? And he said yes, and as far as the first part of the question. It was just nice to see that get done so fast.
Yeah, I mean, obviously in the last couple of years they've changed the rules. You know, draft picks have to sign by July 17th, I think, this year, instead of being able to drag it out until August when they are, you know, right before they go back to school. So that helps. But yeah, I mean, it was good to see a guy not only, you know, did mess around, they gave him slot money. It was $2.1 million or $2.4 million, something like that. We'll see if they're able to sign some of their other guys. I know that their third pick was a big Cardinals fan. He's got to be excited about that. Doesn't mean he's going to sign. He was a high school guy. He could decide he's not going to. Odds are the Cardinals will get him. I can't imagine if I was drafted by the Cardinals as a high schooler, I don't think I'd take the risk of not being able to play for a team like that. So I imagine that'll get done. But, yeah, I think the Cardinals really needed the hitters. I know you could, there's that idea that you take pitchers and you can trade them for hitters, which is true. But like Correa said, he wanted to get, they were running out of spots for pitchers. I mean, really, that's what it boiled down to, is they didn't necessarily have a spot for this guy to play in the minors, and they wanted to make sure that they, you know, had some hitters. So, I'm interested to see if these guys, like you say, their power translates into, wooden bats, and how fast. You're not going to see, you know, it's not going to be a Michael Walker or a Marco Gonzalez situation where he's in the major leagues next year. You know, it's going to be a little bit slower process, especially with high school kids. You know, you're looking at, you know, 4 or 5 years down the road, which is difficult sometimes for us to grasp, but that is the way of things, unfortunately. Let's shift before we wrap this. Let's talk about this series coming up with Kansas City. Honestly, it's actually the All-Star game, pretty much, since I think, 11 of the 18 starters are either Royals or Cardinals right now, is the way the voting is going. So, maybe this time it counts. It's a series that has the Cardinals and the Royals both being the best teams in their division. Both being the best teams in their league. We saw the Cardinals struggle with the Royals a bit over in Kansas City. Still wonder about that rain delay game. If it hadn't been for the rain, would they have been able to come back? Who knows? And they go into St. Louis. What are we looking for here? I mean, is this going to be another one of those things where we're going to just have to pitch our brains out, to have a chance to win?
Yeah, it's funny. The Cardinals kind of sent the Royals on kind of a skid the last time we faced them when Walker took that Sunday game in KC. I mean, they wanted to get swept by the Yankees. They had some trouble with the Cubs, but lately they've gotten their feet back. They're actually on a 4-game winning streak. They swept the Twins. I think the Royals, I mean, they match up so well with the Cardinals because I think they're built kind of same way. They have a little more pop. Okay, maybe a little bit more than just a little more pop, but I think that these two teams are going to produce a lot of close games. I mean, I know the Cardinals beat them 6-1, but it always seems like this is one of those teams, kind of like the Dodgers, that has me always thinking they're going to put the Cardinals to the test. You're going to see, they're going to make us pitch our brains out. They're going to make us, you know, it's going to be a matchup of managers. I mean, Matheny's going to have to, you know, rise above his Twitter hate and just be a great manager and make some good moves, because I think these teams, as far as the first thing I think about is this, the Bay Steelers testing Molina, even though they didn't seem to test him that much in KC, and not as much as I thought. That's the first thing that came to my mind in that series. But then the next thing comes around is the pitching. Can Lynn make that Saturday start? Because if he can't make that start, then that kind of makes the series a little bit more of a need for hitting, and, you know, can the Cardinals hit enough? But I think the Cardinals' superior home record, I mean, they're 22-7 at home. I just feel comfortable with them at home right now. I don't get worried about really any team coming in and roughing us up. I don't think that's going to happen. It hasn't happened that often this year that teams just come in and handle the Cardinals at home. But I'm kind of confident the Cardinals can take this series, especially if Lynn makes that start. If he doesn't make the start, makes it a little more interesting, but I think these two teams match up really well.
You got Ventura going tomorrow night. He has been off and on. Unfortunately, he was off last time, so maybe on this time. We'll have to see. It's one of those situations where hopefully the Cardinals can beat up on him. They got 4-7 off of him last time, so. You have Jeremy Guthrie going in the middle of the games. He's struggled. Jason Vargas, the one thing that has been the Achilles heel for the Royals is that starting rotation. The Cardinals match up well, depending on the Lynn situation, in all three of the games. You'd probably give them the advantage in starter. And so they're going to have to take advantage of that. They're going to have to score early, and they're going to have to hope that their starters can keep these guys off the bases. Like you said, you do not want to get into the Brewers in the bullpen. You know, so many times it's like, hey, let's wear this guy down so we can get into the bullpen, and you know, no, you don't want to do that. You want to be hitting these guys that are starting, because you start turning it over to that Kansas City bullpen and it's just over. I mean, they can stop. They can be over with in the sixth inning if you're not careful. Yeah. So, I think there's a lot of people wearing Cardinal red that want to win this series after that time in Kansas City. I don't think we want to see them win the whole both of those.
Not at all.
And this is a big test. Like you say, we saw them play well against the Dodgers. They are seem to be able to step up their game to play with the top teams in the league. But this is just another opportunity for them to do that, and hopefully they'll rise again to the challenge.
Yeah, I mean, and really, you know, if you look past this series, if the Cardinals can just hang on, and then we got the Minnesota Twins, and they're not exactly just a foot mat. I mean, they're 33-26, but they're having a little bit of a skid themselves, and they don't play good on the road. So looking ahead, I mean, you know, it's not like you're going to have to face a bunch of great teams, especially ones that play good on the road. I mean, you just have to like I said earlier, it's the craziest thing to say, but you just don't want to get swept. I mean, you just want to keep treading water and hopefully play good enough to outpitch the Royals, because I think we do stack up very well. I mean, the least amount as far as matchup concern is Lackey and Vargas, but Lackey is so good at home that I get that Sunday game advantage to the Cardinals just because of the starters and the way that Lackey pitches at home. And then, you know, you have Jaime Garcia, who's pitching really good right now going tomorrow night, and Lance Lynn makes that start. I mean, you saw the Cardinals, they were able to really, I mean, the Royals got the first game in that series and they beat up on Lynn. The second game was kind of contested, as you said, because of the way that Lackey, you know, the Cardinals didn't get a full game. And then we kind of really handled them on Sunday with the way that Walker was. So if you just look at that one series, it was a 2-2 out of 3 for the Royals, but I almost kind of considered it, if we're going to go by the bare rules, it was more of a 1-1 as far as finished games. And so it really means that these teams are going to go head to head. You got two afternoon games. Saturday and Sunday are both afternoon games. And I think that, I mean, I think it's going to be a very loud crowd. You're going to have a lot of blue in it. I mean, it's going to be a very contested crowd. It's just the way it is these days. The Royals used to be a foot mat in AL Central, and now they're a powerhouse, and they're a team that's going to be good for a while. They have the young pitching to back it up, and it makes these little, you know, I-70 series a lot more interesting. And I think as far as just the way they stack up, I think the Cardinals, like I said, they have the ability to take 2 out of 3. And a big hinge point is if Lynn makes that start. But, you know, the Cardinals, if it's just me, or do they seem to hit better at home too? I just think that they happen to, except for that Mets series, they just happen to play better at home. They happen to, I mean, jump out the leads faster than most. I don't know. That could just be what I'm thinking as far as the eye test. But I think they happen to do, as far as we know, the pitching is great, but I think they happen to hit better at home. Is there any numbers to back that up?
Well, actually, I am pulling that up now. Yeah, a little bit they do. They're hitting 278 at home, OPS of 750. On the road, they're hitting 247 with an OPS of 689, and just about the same number of games, although they've got about 100 more at-bats away from Bush. Yeah, I mean, they are doing better at home, and I guess you'd expect that somewhat. That's a little surprising that you have those away numbers, you know, still being off, even though you just went through Colorado. But they do hit better at home, and I think that the crowd gets into it. They do feed off that somewhat. Interestingly enough, they've hit more home runs away from Bush, but Bush is kind of a pitcher's ballpark, tends to be one of those for both sides. So, yeah, I like them being at home. I mean, you look at the fact that they're, you know, 22-7 in Bush. That's significantly better than anybody else in the major leagues. After we went and put 3 losses on the Dodgers in their ballpark. Yeah, you gotta think it should be a fun series. Hopefully it's a successful series for the Cardinals, because we really don't need to hear about it from the Royals fans for another, until October. That would be very, very not good. I think, both of us follow a number of Royals people on Twitter, and you just don't need that. So,
yeah. I mean,
final thoughts, any last minute thing you want to give us, a movie of the week, anything to wrap this up with?
Best beard of the year, I think, still belongs to Jason Worth, because I think you're going to see none of his face by the end of the season. I just think about, I thought about that last night. You know, we need to end with a very quirky thing, and I think best fits our one of our bio things is, you know, beards in baseball and STL Cardinals talk. I think best beard still goes to while Jason Mott is a favorite because he used to pitch here, I think Jason Worth's face is going to be covered up by the end of September. What do you think?
I wouldn't be surprised. He tends to do that. Let's see. We actually had a Twitter question in those regard, isn't it? We had, what was it, best beards in Cardinal history each decade. I don't know without digging into some pictures how relevant we can do that. But, I mean, you obviously are going to – you got Suter, you got Mott, you've got – well, you had the whole hair thing going with Al. I don't know if that – just the beard. It may have been
you got, maybe Gary Gaetti when he was on that one streak. He grew that facial hair, that beard for that half of that season that he just wouldn't seem to shave no matter what. I'm thinking about really good beards, and Lance Berkman had a really grayish, pretty good beard in 2011. As far as just great beards, I think I just keep thinking about Jason Mott. I think Mott is the most dedicated beardsman as far as in recent Cardinal history. I mean, it's just as far as just not giving, having any care in the world about, touching a blade or trimming it up. And, as a guy that just grew his beard out crazily big for the first time and then lost it because of one trim mistake, I can tell you how lost a man feels without his beard. And that, right now I'm slowly growing it back. But I think as far as the best Cardinals beard from each decade, I think Jason Mott's an easy one. And as you said, Bruce Suter and Gary Gaetti, more the more underrated ones. But I can't think of a beard really in the 90s that just really jumps out, except for Gaetti. I can't seem to really think about one. It just goes, whoa, that was a lot.
Beards have come back into fashion.
They have. So it's playoff beards, Dan. I mean, come on.
Yeah, and some of that may be part of it. I think that, and there's been different, not necessarily in St. Louis, definitely you think about it in Cincinnati and in New York,
Boston,
where teams have had policies against facial hair in the past, so... I think you're right. I always like it when Adam Wainwright's got a beard. It always looks a little weird when he shaves it off.
Yeah, it does. You mentioned that. It kind of freaks me out when he does it, especially with Rosenthal. He shaved off his goatee. Mm-hmm. And I was like, no. You need to, you need a beard, man. You're a closer. I mean, Mott used to come out in ninth and pretty much have lowered the hitter's batting average because of how scary he looked and how many times he rubbed his hat and massaged his beard and moved around like he had ants in ants in his pants. I mean, for me, when I think of a closer, you just gotta have that aura. And right now, Rosenthal looks like he's a senior in college. I mean, the guy is throwing triple digits, so I can't complain. But you're right. When players trim off their beard, I mean, it does look weird. Now, there's other players like Jim Emmons who I can't even remember even having a 5 o'clock shadow.
No, and Pujols always tended to be one that kind of fluctuated as well. You're talking about closers, though. I it still reminds me of that commercial the Cardinals did. Well, it's been 4 or 5 years ago since they've actually done any good commercials out of spring training, which is disappointing because, some of these teams like the Mariners do some great ones every year. Cardinals look to have a run in there. Everybody remembers someone of red hitting the ball over the ballpark and setting off the car alarm, stuff like that. They had one, and I don't remember who was the closer at that time, because don't think it was Mott. Came out and
Franklin,
that's what it was, and handing out Suter beards to everybody in the bullpen, because if you were going to be a reliever, you had to have the beard, they put the fake
beard
right.
on.
I had forgotten about that till you mentioned it. So, it's a big thing, and I shaved about 11 years ago for the last time, and it trim it up every, regularly, but I couldn't grow it fast enough to shave the whole thing off. So we're going to, not going to risk that.
Yeah.
So.
Well, now you mentioned about red, I mean, I've been meaning to do this. I think everybody needs to get on Twitter and do their own little I Love Red 2 video. It's one of those things I keep seeing and I want to do, just get on there and show some thanks. It is the anniversary, help me out here, it's the anniversary of his, how many years has he been in baseball?
Well, 70.
70 years in baseball for Red Shandings. Everybody get on Twitter sometime, and, you don't have to do your hair or, stop eating. I mean, to just, get on there and just say thanks, and for a guy that's really, truly given his life to this game. You just don't see that a lot. You see a lot of great players in this game, but you see a lot of players that just kind of pass through and just serve the purpose and get out of the game. But Red, you can't drag this guy away from the game.
Yeah, you're not going to see that as much anymore, especially with the money that the ball players make. They don't have the need to stay in baseball if they don't want to.
Now,
you know, some do. I mean, we see, but it's not going to be your Hall of Famers. You're not going to see, I don't think you're going to see Albert Pujols, in a coaching position. You're not going to see probably Mike Trout, being a manager, you know, years from now. You're going to see the guys like Mike Matheny. And like, you know, Brad Auspices, the guys that
Walt Weiss,
made some money, but they weren't ever superstars. They never, you know, and they do have a love for the game. There's no doubt about it. But they've also have a need for a job, as it were.
Hey, if we're all the Daniel Descalzo fans, he's the perfect prototypical manager. The guy mm-hmm. Didn't really do too well, but he might be. You know, you might see him on there with a lineup card sooner or later. You know, he could be one of those guys. Before I really get off here tonight, guys, I want you to make sure you give us a follow on Twitter at, and I think our thing, it's funny, we tried to put Best Dan Baseball with the one instead of the last L in baseball on Twitter. And we're on Facebook as well. Give us a like. We're gonna get on there. We're going to post some weekly stuff. Or you're going to find this show there, hopefully post in the next couple of days once again. And on Twitter at Best Dan Baseball, and on Twitter, Best Dans in Baseball. So just get on there and give us a follow and like our page where we're trying to really, you know, fire this up. I mean, there's the one thing I try to do with my time. I know I'm everywhere on the internet, but I do that because I try to find out stuff that the internet doesn't have. And I don't think there's a Best Dans in Baseball podcast. So I thought that that'd be a great thing to do. And it's one of those things where in this vastly, crazily moving world of digital media, you got to find stuff that people don't have yet, and they don't have a Best Dance in Baseball podcast. So get on Twitter and Facebook and link up with us, and we'll have some fun.
Yeah, I also want to give a shout-out to John Nagel, formerly from Cardinals Farm. Now I think he's writing over at Scout. A lot of times he had to shutter Cardinals Farm, but John's going to hopefully put this thing together. So, you know, Dan and I recorded, and if it sounds good, it's probably because John did something to it and made it presentable. So we want to say thanks to John, and as we get finish up here, I'll email him the file and let him do whatever magic he needs to do. Dan, again, we've got the Royals, and then we got the Twins before we come back at it next Thursday. Any predictions on what the record's going to be over the next 7 days?
I think because we're playing at home, and I'm just the way this team has been so dominant at home, I think we're going to see a team that's still maintaining the best record in baseball due to the fact that this team finds ways to win. I mean, they already have a heavy amount of walk-off wins. We were shown an ability to come back in games. I can't really tell you a lot of games where the Cardinals have actually gotten out to a big lead. And it's always the us fighting back, and, you know, we're resilient. And I think if anybody, no matter what happens with Lynn tomorrow, I think this team's going to find a way to stay in it because that's just what they've been doing the last 4 years. I mean, consecutively, they just seem to find a way to stay competitive. Even if the opponent seems to have the advantage, we seem to be able to play up to the level and out pitch or out hit or just do enough to win. I think you're going to maybe see a good homestand from Hayward. I think Hayward's going to come home. He's going to, you know, he's going to realize that he has a chance to do something. And I think somebody's going to step up this homestand. I really hope, and I even think a little bit. I mean, I don't think a lot. Okay. I mean, that takes a lot of work. And for me, that hurts. But as far as just hoping for one guy to really come into his own, it's Jason Hayward in this homestand.
Yep. I'll say 5-2 over the, you know, cause two of those games,
that's a good one. Yeah.
Two of those games will be in Minnesota, two of them. And then the rest of them are in Bush. You figure they'll lose one against the Royals and then probably one of the four against the Twins. But, you know, 5-2, that's actually about normal for them right now. It's a rare week when they're playing 4-3 I don't know if we've seen a week where they've been, you know, under 500. So, that's my guess. I'm terrible at guessing, so.
Me too. I'm not good.
Yeah, I don't know why we bother to do it, but we'll pretend. Been fun. It's been our first one. I don't know that they'll all go this long, but then again, you never know. Once Dan and I get talking, there's not necessarily any stopping us. But talk at you next week. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for listening to The Best Dance in Baseball. We'd love to have your feedback on the show. Email us at bestdansinbaseball@gmail.com. Dan Buffa can be found on Twitter at Buffa82, Daniel Shoptaw at C70. The show's Twitter handle is bestdan, BASEBAL1. You can also find us on Facebook under Best Dance in Baseball.